Welcome to On the Money, where you can find out about anything and everything to do with finance, business, and the economy. On the Money is broadcast live from the studios of Radio 2SER nationwide on the Community Radio Network. I'm Kevin Suarez, and coming up on the program...
It only comes to bite them later on in life when they actually need to use the funds.
Super funds, which are the good ones? It turns out the banks are taking advantage of customers' ignorance of fees on their retirement funds, so they may end up with less than they expected when they retire. We investigate the fat cat funds. Also on the show...
Formaldehyde, for example, stays in the fabric forever. So when you think that you spend a third of your life in bed and that those toxic fumes that come off formaldehyde will be coming to you a third of your life while you sleep on those sheets.
It turns out that the sheets you're sleeping on now could be toxic. Natural fibres promise better health for people considering some of the side effects of man-made fibres on your skin and for your respiration. And one of the oldest fabrics could actually be the best for you. All this and more coming up on the Money. But first... When many people think of cryptocurrency, they think of Bitcoin, the face of the online currency. It has many uses, such as transferring large amounts of money between companies and for investing. However, it doesn't have much use for the general public, since a single Bitcoin can cost between hundreds to thousands of dollars. A collaboration between Monash University and Colin Star Capital seeks to introduce a new cryptocurrency, one that could be used to, say, buy a coffee. I spoke to Dr. Joseph Liu, who was one of the developers of the currency. I first asked him...
Cryptocurrency is a kind of electronic payment system, and different from the other kinds of such as the Visa credit card, the cryptocurrency is a decentralized system. That means there's no central party. There's no trusted party involved, so that everyone can just use this kind of payment system through the network. So it's better than the traditional one because we don't need any trusted party to be involved in this kind of payment system. And also, this can be used in any part of the world provided that there's an internet connection.
Okay, and so what exactly could this cryptocurrency be used for?
It can be useful in many, many ways. For example, if you want to somehow, say, for example, transfer the money from this country to another country, now you need to transfer through the bank, and that means the bank may charge you some transaction fee. But if I just use this kind of cryptocurrency, it's very easy. It's just kind of digital file, and I can just put it into my USB stick, and then I can transfer to any part of the world. This is one of the advantages. The second one, because this is kind of electronic payment system, that means you can use it anywhere. You can use it from your mobile phone. You can use it from your computer. So it's much easier for you to use a credit card at this moment.
Okay, so for the most regular people who tend to use, say, their FPOST, so what would be the day-to-day applications for this kind of technology?
For example, they can use just as a daily life payment. If I want to buy a coffee from a cafe, I can use it. Or if I want to buy a ticket online, I can also use it. So it ranges from just the normal daily life payment system to, for example, some B2B business. If I want to transfer $1 million to my partners in Japan, I can also use it. So it covers from just a small amount payment to the very large B2B payment system.
Okay, so what is the role of cryptocurrency in general in the world financial system?
Currently, of course, Bitcoin is the most popular one and the greatest market capture at this moment. But there are some disadvantages of Bitcoin. First, is the transaction time. Currently, if you want to make a transaction by Bitcoin, it may wait you for more than 10 minutes for confirmation. And, well, if it is a B2B, business, say $1 million from Australia to US is still acceptable, but for a small amount payment, just if I want to buy a Coke in the supermarket, and if you ask me to wait for 10 minutes, it's not acceptable. So this is one of the problems that currently we are facing by Bitcoin. So that's why we want to investigate in other kinds of cryptocurrency that can eliminate this major problem.
So in other words, Bitcoin is used more by larger companies, while you want to make your cryptocurrency more accessible to the general public?
Yes, exactly. And also for the Bitcoin, it requires every transaction to pay a transaction fee. But how about if I just pay, say, $1? The transaction fee may be very large when comparable to the amount that I'm going to pay. So this is also the reason that we want to create another cryptocurrency that can, say, minimize the transaction fee so that even the small amount payment is still practical.
So this cryptocurrency that you're developing, it's you're going to establish a blockchain cryptocurrency, which is called Hcash. But What exactly is blockchain technology?
First of all, we use of the blockchain technology, that is a decentralized system, and also we allow every user to have a very, very fast confirmation time instead of the very, very unacceptable time. And also, our technology make it to, we call it a post-quantum secure. That is, even in the future, in the 5 or 10 years later, if the quantum computer is invented, our payment system is still secure. While the current one, such as Bitcoin, if later on, say, for example, 5 years later, if we have a quantum computer, we can easily crack the whole system. So this is the one that we want to prevent. We want to prevent this kind of security risk happening even in the existence of the quantum computer.
So you were just talking about quantum computing, which is used usually to find cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoins. But with Hcash, since you wanted to get it more accessible to the public, would it exactly be something that you would be able to find in shops or something you'd find down the back of your couch, so to speak?
Yes, definitely. This is also one of our movement towards the development of the whole Hcash system. Not just the core part, but we also develop some other peripheral system that can be compatible to the main Hcash system. For example, we allow, say, the small amount of payment to be used in a cafe. So this is also included in our project.
So, one final question. So why did you decide to team up with Colin Star Capital?
The main reason first, they're Australian-based and we are also in Australia. Of course, we want to let this happen in Australia. And second, they give us a very, very good support. They allowed us to have a freedom to develop our own crypto algorithm to be used in Hcash. That means we, as a researcher, we can still stand at the front of the development. We can develop our own favorite crypto algorithm that can be used in Hcash. So this is also I think this is the main reason that we want to partner with Colin Star. We have the main freedom, and this is not easy. For example, if we partner with another company, usually the company requires you to do this and do that. But for Colin Star, no, they just give us a very, very simple task. Development your favorite crypto algorithm to be used in Hcash. So that's why we partner together very easily.
You're listening to On The Money, finding out everything to do with money, finance and business. And we're broadcasting around Australia on the Community Radio Network from the studios of Radio 2SER in Sydney. I'm Kevin Suarez. And now it's business time.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, it's business. It's business time.
Bit tired, out of sorts, or had some sort of skin irritation after you wake up in the morning? Well, the problem could be your sheets. Some synthetic fibers can give off irritant fumes while you sleep, affecting your breathing, and also can irritate some people's skin, giving them any number of skin problems. Sue Johnson, has found that linen, which comes from flax, has none of these problems and actually helps to regulate heat in hotter climates. But when she tries to buy linen sheets, they were hard to find and even harder to finance. Roderick Chambers finds out about how she founded her company and what Lux Linen actually is.
So it's an online French linen bedding, right? So it's pure linen, doesn't have anything to do with cotton or synthetics, and it's all about natural fabric. So it has, you know, standard things, but I also do custom designs for people as well. So, you know, any colour they like, I can match a Dulux paint sample for them if they like. But it's all natural fibres.
And you believe that there's certain problems with sheets that people may be sleeping on right now. There's toxins and things. Tell us a bit about those.
Absolutely. So people seem to want cheap and wrinkle-free, and that's important. So what happens is they put polyesters into them, and that obviously brings the cost down, etc., and it also is slightly less wrinkly. But they use formaldehyde, chlorine, and silicon. And the silicon helps to keep it, you know, wrinkle-free, because that's a really big deal. But formaldehyde, for example, stays in the fabric forever. So when you think that you spend a third of your life in bed and that those toxic fumes that come off formaldehyde will be coming to a third of your life while you sleep on those sheets.
Is formaldehyde the stuff that they preserve organs in and things? Yes. Oh, okay. But so
and you're sleeping in it while you're alive.
Well, you should live longer then, shouldn't you, if you're a bit well-preserved?
No, but your skin will live longer than you do.
Oh, I see. And so what sort of effects do these things have on you?
Well, it can be anything from a skin irritation. Look, 40% of Australians, and this is done by dermatology, report some kind of irritation. And it could not just be just their sheets, but it's an accumulative effect. And like I said, you spend a lot of time in bed. You could have headaches from the fumes, but, you know, sometimes respiratory problems.
So when do people start noticing this?
Look, sometimes, I mean, I've had customers who buy my linen sheets who tell me that if they get sheets that have been produced in that way, that they can feel it by the next morning.
Wow. And is this how the idea to start up a business came to you, from people saying, you know, I'm getting a rash, or I'm getting fumes, I'm not feeling well? Is this how you got into it?
Well, look, partly, but also partly because I'm a restless sleeper. And so putting, you know, a lot of thought into, you know, having the right mattress, the right environment, good sheets to sleep on was really important for me, myself, because, like I said, I'm not a great sleeper. And the thing about linen is, as well, it moderates your temperature, right? It gives you a slight massaging effect. So if it's cool in summer, warm in winter, and if you've got a partner, you know, often you know, women need to have a little bit more warmth and the men like get overheated. Well, the linen just regulates.
My grandmother was a big proponent of linen, and she said that Irish linen was the best linen. Is that right?
Well, interesting you should say that. So in Irish linen is known for being the finest, but most of the linen, or the flax, if you like, that makes the linen isn't grown in Ireland. It actually comes from Europe. And what they do in Ireland is it's the processing part, because they have things like, you know, when they ferment it, for example, in their bogs, you know, in slow-moving water.
Yeah.
Because they have that natural environment, that's mostly where it's processed, but not grown.
Oh, I see. And so were you looking for natural fibres in stores and you thought, you know, I can't get what I want? Is that how you... Often people, this is how they start their businesses. They go, look, there's nothing here for people.
Well, what lots of it is, you either can't get what you want, or it's an extremely expensive investment. Now, you know, obviously linen is a little bit more expensive than you know, the polyesters and the lower quality fabrics, but you want to be able to, you know, access it. So what my view was to use a great fabric like that, but to have it so it's affordable.
You've got a store in Canberra, Lux Linen store, which sounds lovely, and you're also online. Now, is this a bit a foot in both camps of being on the net and also having an actual bricks and mortar store?
Well, look, I started on the internet, and you know, I've got customers in the US, New Zealand, you know, all over Australia, etc. And one of the things about it, though, is that I really like is the feedback that you get from customers. I have great feedback online, but when you have actually in the shop, you know, people want to talk about it. They want to talk about colours and how to create an environment, and I'm creating new things all the time.
And have you financed it all yourself, or have you got a business partner? How did you go about structuring the business when you started?
Well, so I'm a technology analyst by trade, so I borrowed no money. I invested my own money and started everything from the cloud, you know, and had to learn all about social media marketing and, you know, importing and, you know, stock control, etc.
And what do you do in terms of dispatch and warehousing and all that sort of logistics things?
So I keep a lot of stock in Australia and I do the dispatch, and I've got people who help me, of course, but I don't do drop and ship from somewhere else.
Is the overseas market really important to you?
It will be, you know, but I'm mostly interested in Australia firstly. Things like linen is really important because we have a very hot climate in a lot of the time. Like I spent 30 years in Queensland, and getting a really good natural fibre so you can have a good night's sleep is important.
Oh, it sounds lovely. what do some of your customers say when they get your linen and they've been previously on nasty polyester sheets? What happened? What do they say to you?
Look, what they tell you is that once you've gone to linen, you never go back.
Yeah.
And what happens, of course, is it's a slightly different fibre in that it's got a bit of a texture to it. But like I said, you do, you know, lots of women, for example, over the age of 50 say, you know, they get hot flushes at night, saying it's fantastic, it copes with that, wicks all the moisture away and it doesn't get them overheated. They last forever. One of the great things about linen, because it's the strongest fibre in the world, by the way, for bedding, is that it gets... responds well to being treated as rough as you like. So the more you wash it and throw it out on the line and sleep on it, it will just get softer and it doesn't peel.
A lot of the people at the moment are getting excited about bamboo. How does it compare to bamboo?
Well, bamboo, again, gets, you know, it's sometimes a blend. It's a natural fibre, but it has that sleek feel that doesn't breathe. Like, it's nice, but linen's better.
Are you finding that this is taking off for you? Have you given away your ideas of your previous employment and previous life?
Look, it's in the works, you know, to do exactly that. I've got, like I said, I've got a lot of people who help me, but I go out to the shop and I do a lot of the online stuff myself. But look, springtime in particular, I find every year, the 1st of September, it goes crazy, absolutely crazy.
Oh, so I better let you get back to it then. It sounds like you've got things to do. Anyway, thanks, Sue, so much for coming on the program and telling us a bit about your story and your business.
Thank you very much. And like I said, if you visit us at luluxlinen.com.au.
Sue Johnson there, founder of Lulux Linen, ending that report by Roderick Chambers.
On the money, get your shake of the sauce bottle.
For the past 5 years, Australia's leading digital investment advisor and fund manager, Stockpot, has been campaigning to raise awareness of the impact of fat cat fund fees have on everyday Australians. The latest findings from the annual report reveal some sobering results for Australians and their superannuation. Lack of knowledge on how super funds work...
Consistently underperformed and underdelivered for its members. So we look at 4,000 different super funds and managed funds every year, and we put them into a few categories based on how they've performed. And the worst category are these fat cat funds that over 1 year and 3 years and 5 years have done worse than all of the other funds in their category and by a significant margin. So they need to have done worse by more than 10% over that period, which is actually quite a large amount. Just over 500 fit into this category. So there are a lot of poor performing funds out there.
There also seems to be no outright winners between millennials, baby boomers and the Generation X. With millennials potentially paying more than $300,000 in fees and fat cat funds losing around 49% of returns for conservative super funds, why has the rort been able to continue on for so long?
It's a good question. I think there's a few reasons. I mean, first of all, superannuation isn't the most exciting topic, so a lot of people just block it out. And because of that and a bit of apathy, people aren't really focused on super as something they should really care about. And it only comes to bite them later on in life when they actually need to use the funds. I think also a bit of lack of financial literacy also impacts it. So people don't really understand the impact of the effect of compounding fees. And if you think about 1% or 1.5% per year, it doesn't sound like a lot. But over 30 or 40 years, if you're paying that amount of your super away, it can end up being hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, and then again, the third reason I'd say is there are so many products out there, people are just so confused, and that causes them to do nothing. So I think there are a few reasons why people don't do something about it, and a few reasons that a lot of these very poor-performing funds still exist. But you know, these are things people can you know, can actually solve by doing a little bit of research.
Yeah, so on that note, the report also questions the accuracy of the industry's funds reporting their costs and fees. With many Australians uninformed on how super funds work, is it fair to say that these industry funds are taking advantage of the average Australian?
Well, first of all, I should say that on average, we found the industry funds do better than the retail funds. So industry funds are these funds that were set up originally to manage the super of usually sort of union-based workforces, and now have become open funds where anyone can invest in them. Generally, we found they do better, and actually 9 out of the top 10 funds that we found this year were, in fact, industry super funds. However, what we did find this year is that under new reporting standards, and this is more of an accounting thing than anything, the industry funds are going to need to disclose a lot of the costs that they're incurring internally to manage assets like roads and shopping centres, which they're buying and managing themselves. And so once they start to disclose the costs involved in managing these assets, the fees that they're going to have to explain that they're paying to consumers will look a lot higher.
So is it fair to say that the worst offenders for the fat cat super funds are the big banks? By the reports, it shows ANZ and AMP the top two. So, in effect, are the banks dragging their feet on helping customers avoid these high fees because they know that they can rip them off?
Well, we think so. Every year we've done this report, and this is its fifth year now, we've found that the big banks are the worst culprits when it comes to having so many of these funds that have underperformed. And the reason that they've underperformed in most cases looks to be fees. They haven't all performed badly in terms of the returns they've earned. However, after you pay away the costs, their performance has been pretty poor. And it makes a lot of sense, because if you're paying away and some of these funds charge 2% a year or sometimes even more, it's very difficult for a fund that's paying 2% a year in fees to do very well, especially in the current environment where returns are pretty low anyway. So a lot of funds are only earning 6 or 7% before fees, and if you're paying away 2%, it's like a third of your returns you're paying away to your fund manager. So if you count the funds that have done the worst, most of them do belong to the big four banks and AMP.
It's been raised that fat cat funds have fallen from 18% in the last year. Is there any reason for this? And more importantly, are customers waking up to the fact that over the last few years they've been paying too much in fees?
I think there's a bit of good news in it, and there's a bit of luck. So the number of these fat cat funds did fall by 18% this year. Part of the reason, I hope, is that over the last 5 years, a few people have taken note of what we've been reporting and actually decided to switch funds and caused some of these poor performers to shut down. And we have seen a number of these funds shut down or actually encourage consumers to move their money into other better funds. But in a lot of cases, this doesn't happen. And the fact that there's still 500 of them would suggest that they're not doing enough to push people into better funds. So that's probably the best reason why the funds are they're still doing quite poorly.
So on that note, I think the big question is then, how do we make sure we aren't being charged too much in fees? And with an abundance of what we call fit cat funds, how easy is it to shift across to one?
Well, yeah, the good news is that even though there are a lot of poor performing funds, we also found a lot of great funds. There was over 600 this year that we found actually did better than their peers over 1 year and 3 year and 5 years, and by a significant margin. So there's great funds out there as well. There's probably two factors that we notice are common with a lot of these good funds, and they are, first of all, their fees tend to be lower, and every year that you're paying fees, it's money out of your return, so that's quite clear why that's the case. So that's the first thing people really need to focus on. And the other one is the mix of investments in the fund. So a lot of younger people, may think that they're scared of the stock market falling, and so they put their money in a conservative fund that doesn't have a lot of exposure to growth investments. But actually, if you're investing for 30 or 40 or 50 years, that's not a very smart move, because even if there is a short-term fall in the markets over a long period of time, that doesn't really matter a lot. And actually, over long periods of time, including market crashes and downturns, growth investments tend to do much better than more conservative investments. So if you've got a long time frame, look for a fund with more growth investments like shares and property, and then make sure whatever fund you're in has low fees. We find that the funds that have fees of less than 1% and particularly less than two-thirds of 1% tend to do better. So if you can find that combination, you're definitely on the right track.
Chris Brackey, CEO of Stockpot, ending that report by James Hughes. That's all we have time for you on the Money this week. We hope you'll tune in again next week to find out everything you need to know about money, finance, and business. Hello if you're listening in to Wet Tank FM in Kempsey, or Alpine Radio 96.5 FM in the Victorian Alps, or 8CCC in Alice Springs. Thanks to executive producer and technical producer Roderick Chambers and producer James Hughes. On the Money is produced in the studios of Radio 2SER for the Community Radio Network. You can find all of our shows and stories at 2ser.com/onthemoney. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Put it on your friend's phone as well. Follow us on Twitter and look for @onthemoney2ser and find us on Facebook. I'm Kevin Suarez. We'll be back again next week to give you the inside running on all things financial. Thanks for your company.
On foot or by bike, get ready to immerse yourself in life and entertainment in the heart of the city on October 28. For one night only, Mrs. Macquarie's Road will be closed to cars and open for people to walk or ride past light installations, special effects and some Halloween surprises. There's also an outdoor lounge by the water featuring silent disco, roller racing and food trucks. Find out more at lightthecity.sydney. City of Sydney, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
There are over 200 volunteers at 2SER making over 70 programs and podcasts every week. But making radio ain't cheap. Your money helps keep these programs on air. Give us a call on 9514 9500 during your favourite show or donate anytime. Head over to 2ser.com.
Your donation to 2SER is tax deductible.
From the freshest new music to the latest current affairs, 2SER is real radio. But we need your money to keep doing it. Give us a call on 9514 9500 during your favourite show or donate anytime. Head over to 2SER.com. 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music.
Your donation to 2SER is tax deductible.
2SER presents the Peep Temple live at the Bald-Faced Stag, Saturday, October 28. Australia's powerhouse, the Peep Temple returned to Sydney to celebrate totality with Melbourne dirge rock lords Batpiss. The Peep Temple live at the Bald-Faced Stag, Saturday, October 28, with special guests Batpiss. Tickets from wingsing.co. The Peep Temple, sponsors of 2SER.
Hey, this is Clark. You're listening to 2SER 107.